Welcome to the call. This is a brand new experience. Madeline and I are in Taipei, Taiwan. And maybe we can close that. Yeah, close the window. So we're in a hotel here. We've been on the road for almost a month, all over Southeast Asia. And we're on the last leg of our tour. Here we are. It's been really a whirlwind. And so today is December 20th, 2019. Welcome to our World Peace Diet call, World Peace Diet Circle call. And here's Madeline. I want to give her a chance to say hello. So here she is.
Hello from Taiwan.
Yes, this is, I don't know if you can see, those of you can see we're like on the sixth floor of a hotel, but doing a whole bunch of lectures and things. So Madeline is not going to be joining me on this call too much. I thought we'd go ahead and talk about what we've been up to for the last month, and then see. So since this is a Zoom call, one of our facilitators had asked me to address, which is her question was, is it accurate to say that speciesism grew out of herderism? And I'll address that briefly, and then I'd like to talk about what we've been learning, because it's really been extremely enriching this last few weeks that we've been away from home here in Southeast Asia. But herderism, as you know, is a word that I coined that refers to the practice and the attitude. So it's both of herding animals. And I've realized, you know, there was no word at all to talk about what we're doing to animals. And there was a philosopher from England, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he coined the word speciesism. So that was... that's a very helpful word, because we have racism, we have sexism, and so forth. So speciesism is the attitude, basically the inner mindset that beings of other species are less than we are, you know, sort of this, like racism. And then Melanie Joy coined the word carnism to refer to a similar idea, the idea that veganism is a philosophy and way of life based on kindness and respect for animals, and carnism is philosophy and way of life based on disrespect for animals, you know, sense of entitlement to use animals. And so the idea was to have a word that talks about what most people hold in their mind as the way our approach should be for animals. And so speciesism and carnism are both words that are similar, a little bit different flavor. But my feeling was that neither one of them actually is descriptive in any way that's helpful. They're just words that are created. And that actually what's really going on here in this society that we're born into is herderism, which is the necessary foundation, really, of a herding society, which is what we live in, a society organized around imprisoning and killing animals for food and other products. That describes our society perfectly. And so a society like that has herderism as its foundation. So speciesism, to answer Patricia's question, yes, speciesism is an outgrowth of herderism. Herderism is the foundation. And the mentality of speciesism, the mentality of carnism, you know, both of those are outgrowths of herderism, which is the underlying, again, totally invisible foundation of our society, because we herd animals. We don't think of ourselves as herding animals nowadays. And, but in prior days, of course, people did think of themselves as herding animals, and that was herderism that was more opaque. This is herderism. Today we have this more transparent, where animals are just used, and it's pretty much invisible. So that's basically that. I think I hope that and more people understand that herderism is the foundation of our society, and that we're working to try to move to a post or trans herderism society, or a society beyond owning animals as property for food. And I think we're making a lot of progress in many ways, but it's hard to say, you know, how that progress is going. But I want to share some of our experiences with this in going to Asia, because I think in going to Asia, especially now that we're in Taiwan, I feel that we're really in the birthplace in many ways of a way of living that's not herderistic, you know, a way of living that's based on respect and compassion for animals. Taiwan, especially, since we've come here, it's been quite revolutionary, especially yesterday. Yesterday was a very powerful day. So I think we landed in, I'll just share the main ideas. We landed in Bali after a long flight through Taipei, and we had a couple of days to try to overcome the jet lag, which was pretty extreme, actually. And it was beautiful. We went swimming and got to know the local vegan scene a little bit on the beach where we were staying. And they had vegan food, which was great. We just told them vegan, and they said, sure, no problem. And so then after a couple of days, we had these wonderful people who were from the local vegan society in Bali come and meet us. And they brought us to our first venue, which was with this man named Dr. Susianto. And I have to say, you know, that this guy is a whirlwind of positive vegan accomplishments in Southeast Asia, and especially in Indonesia. He's the past president of the International Vegetarian Union. He's the founder of the International Vegan Organization. I think it's called the IVO, International Vegan Organization. And he's on the board of the, what's it called, the Asia Pacific Vegetarian Society, something like that. There's a bunch of different organizations that they have created here in Southeast Asia that include the countries here where they have conferences and do talks and do vegan outreach and vegan education. So this man, I thought I was hoping I could show you a photo of him. He's really a beautiful person. But he and his wife and actually their two children, he has a daughter who's about 11 years old, I think. Her name is Vegania. He named her Vegania, and his other daughter is older. Met her also. And so he arranged a lecture in Bali that went really well. I mean, there were almost, I would say, close to 300 people showed up. They had a piano there. And so we were able to share the vegan message in the main city of Bali, which is Denpasar. It's where the airport is. It's the big city. It was very nice. They took us to a famous Hindu temple that was right on the ocean, which was spectacular. And then also to another temple called the Mother Temple, because a lot of the people are Hindus. And so vegetarianism is, you know, quite pronounced. And veganism is coming in. They're trying to, of course, promote vegan living. So we gave the lecture there. Dr. Susianto had flown in from Jakarta, where he lives in Indonesia. And so we spent a few days there. We also stayed in this wonderful hotel that was called, Fortunate Cafe, which is a vegan hotel. And it's a chain. It's a chain of vegan hotels and restaurants throughout Southeast Asia. And it's based in Taiwan. And there's so many amazing things we learned about. And he's a master, a Buddhist teacher in Taiwan here named Master Wong. And I've never met him. I never heard of him before. But they gave me some books written by him. And they're really into the vegan message. So They've created this, it's kind of like, you know, Loving Hut is a whole chain of vegan restaurants started by Supreme Master Shanghai. There's also this Fortunate Cafe, which is a chain of vegan restaurants and hotels, mainly in Asia, started by Master Wong and his students. And he's simply very low profile. I can't see him even here in Taiwan. Nobody seems to know who he is. It's really interesting. We're not doing anything with him here in Taiwan. But this beautiful hotel is really beautiful. And we stayed there and then used that as a base and gave lectures in Bali. And then we flew from there to Jakarta. And Bali is a beautiful country. They won't build any building higher than a coconut palm tree. So the highest building is only 3 stories. And it's really based on respect for nature. It's beautiful. Everywhere you go, there's little shrines. I mean, we saw thousands of shrines by the side of the road and everybody's house and every restaurant and every business. And you can't do anything without making an offering at a shrine. So just this sense of spirituality and connectedness with the earth and respect for the earth was really inspiring in Bali. From there, we went to Jakarta, which is a massive city of, I think, 16 million people. And that's Dr. Susianto's home city. So he introduced us to a school that he is working with. He works with them. It was also founded, actually, by Master Wong in Taiwan. So it's basically Buddhist-oriented, but they totally respect everyone. There's a lot of Hindu people. There's a lot of Islamic people in Indonesia. So people are in this, even though it's a Buddhist school, I guess, in the background, you would never know it. They have Christian, they have Hindu, they have Islam. People can, you know, kids can wear the clothes that they feel like and practice whatever religion they want, but it's all vegan. The school is totally vegan. And it's big. I think there's probably, you know, 300 or 400 people, students there. And really beautiful. So we went to the school. They sang to us. We watched them doing their exercises and different things. We had lunch there with the people. They had this beautiful vegan lunch. All the kids were eating. And it was very inspiring to see that school, totally vegan school in Jakarta. I think it's one of the only ones in Malaysia. And then we went to another one of the Fortunate Cafe restaurants. They had one in Jakarta also, vegan restaurants, part of the chain. And then we also went to a hospital that is basically vegan as well. It's vegan / vegetarian in Jakarta, but it's basically vegan. They don't really serve any dairy to speak of. So we went into the kitchen of the hospital, and it was really neat to see all the workers preparing these vegan meals that were going to go out on these trays to go to the patients in the hospital. And, you know, it's kind of like how it should be, you know. The hospital is also inspired by this Master Wong. So it's quite interesting. I can't wrap my head around a lot of this stuff. It's kind of overwhelming because there's even been a lot more since we got here in Taiwan. But from there, and then we gave a lecture in Jakarta, which was the biggest lecture, I think. We had about 500 people came to that lecture, and that was really well done. We had a piano there. Also, I spoke. Also, Philip Nikazisis, who is a Lopez Diet facilitator, and is also Hippocrates health educator, was with us, and he gave a short talk as well. And so it was really a great event there. Then we flew to Singapore, and in Singapore, we gave several lectures. Singapore is like a totally different thing. It's a very modern, Western city. Everybody spoke English. I didn't have to have a translator, which was nice, because having a translator really stops the flow for me when I'm speaking. We didn't need a translator in Bali, but we did have one in on and so forth. We're all studying to become yoga teachers. And so I gave an all day, not all day, but pretty long, like I think like from noon to 5, like a whole afternoon vegan retreat for them. And that went really well, it seemed like, because there was no translator needed. They all spoke English well enough. So it was beautiful. Like, that was just a real high point, just being there. And then we went the next day to this guy named Tom, who lives in Chiang Mai. He's originally from Chicago. He married a Thai woman, and he's a vegan activist and poet. And he has a farm. So we went to their farm and then also went to a restaurant, gave a short talk there. And then we flew the next morning to Taiwan. And that's when things really have gotten very intense here, because the movement in Taiwan is booming. And the people that are setting it up for us, Ruby is a translator. I've worked with her all four times. Well, three out of four times when we've been here in Taiwan in the past. And her husband, Gordon, he's an engineer and recycling, one of the leading recyclers in the world in terms of technology. He has a company that has technology to clean up the Pacific garbage patch and turn it into high quality diesel fuel and carbon black, which can be used in copy machines, to just get rid of that whole thing and convert it into usable products. He's a genius. Anyway, he has been setting up everything with Ruby, who's the translator here, and they're working with these two local groups. The main one is called Bliss and Wisdom. It's called Zhexin in Taiwanese, but there's that group is incredibly impressive, and I just wish I could somehow convey what they're doing and do it justice. And the other group, Zhu Qi, founded by a woman named Bikshuni Heng Yen, these are huge groups based in Taiwan. So Master Wong, who we ran into his people earlier in Indonesia and in Malaysia, they don't even know who he is here, but I'm sure he has a movement here because it's all over Asia. But these groups are international. I mean, really international. Like Zhu Qi, she has over a million followers, and they have centers all over Africa, Europe, North America. I mean, we have a center right in Santa Rosa. I know they're all over the place. And their focus is service. Their focus is disaster relief. And their focus also is recycling. And they're famous. They themselves, this Buddhist group, recycle 30% of all plastic in Taiwan. They have volunteers who just collect plastic bottles and have collecting stations, and they go around to neighborhoods and they collect these plastic bottles by the like millions, and they send them all to this center, and where they convert the plastic into cloth, and they make these beautiful blankets and shoes and backpacks and clothes and beds and boards and wood and all kinds of stuff out of the plastic. And then they use that in the disaster relief efforts. So they're sending, whenever there's a flood or a hurricane, like in Northern California where we live, Zhu Qi was right there when people lost their homes. They were bringing vegan food to everybody for free. They give them a bank card with like $600 on it that they can buy things that they need. They rebuild the churches. If it's a Christian disaster area, they rebuild Christian churches. If it's Muslims in like in Africa or somewhere, they rebuild their mosques for them. They rebuild their homes. They're really good at rebuilding houses and just treating people medically. They have many hospitals. They have these huge hospitals, like 14 stories high, that are totally vegetarian hospitals. And in Taiwan, there's about four of them. They have a university. It's massive. You see literally hundreds of people with gardens, with all kinds of things, in schools. And it's all basically vegan. They always say vegetarian. And so part of what Gordon and Ruby want me to do is to try to get Zhu Qi to go completely vegan. Because we have this thing that if they would just, they have a little bit here and there, a little dairy. But it's mainly vegan because the Chinese, it's traditional Chinese, and they never did much dairy, but they don't say they're vegan explicitly all the time. So there's still some confusion there that we're trying to clarify. But we were invited to in Kuala Lumpur. There's a big Zhu Qi center there. It's huge. And we took a tour of that, and they invited me to speak at a TED talk that they're putting on. But I don't think I'll be able to make it next April. But But anyway, it was really great to see how open they are to the World Peace Diet message. And they really, and we've worked with Suu Kyi actually over the years. So we did a whole event here 2 days ago in Taiwan with the Suu Kyi people and did an interview with them also. That is on there. They have their own television station called Da Ai, which means great love, television station. And so they interviewed me for that. And we went to their center and talked to the president of the head of the operations of the entire, he had lunch with us on the entire thing. And then I gave a lecture actually at Suu Kyi that a lot of their students came, and it was, It was like when they wire it, they sent it out to all the other centers all over Taiwan at the same time. So there's really a lot of people actually watching. There was about 100 people, but then I guess there were quite several more hundred people or more in these other centers around Taiwan that were also watching the lecture that I gave. And it's really good because I really talk about the domination of cows and so forth. And they're very, they seem to be very interested and supportive. And so that was, and then yesterday we gave several lectures at this. First, we went to a sanctuary, and now we were with this other group called Bliss and Wisdom Group. This is also a Buddhist group based on Tibetan Buddhism here in Taiwan, founded by a great master who passed away, who's Chinese. And it's focused on compassion, totally on compassion and educating for compassion. And they also, it's a huge movement. I can't wrap my head around it. That we were taken to their, first we went to their sanctuary, which was, it was impressive. It was pretty neat. The story was that there was, a goat dairy that had, 2,000 goats crammed in this stinking sheds and the woman took us through the sheds, and this goat's still there. They have about 200 goats now that are descendant or that are still left over. And that's the sanctuary, these goat, mainly goats and tortoises that were illegally brought into the country. But this goat milk operation, I mean, it's so much, it's worse than that. They go through 12 cycles of being impregnated and having their baby stolen. Each time they have birth to a baby, it's usually two babies. And it's a 5-month pregnancy. So she explained the whole thing. And there was we watched a video that showed these poor goats and their huge udders that were stretched and going through that over and over again, and then being killed and all the babies being killed. And so the husband and wife who owned this goat dairy operation, there was also a fish pond where they factory farmed fish. He got sick, I guess, with cancer or something, and she became a devotee. And so they just gave this whole thing to the Bliss and Wisdom group, and they've converted it into a sanctuary. So all the animals now are never going to be killed, obviously. And they have some cows. They're sort of getting it together as an education center. They're still kind of new, but it was so great, to be in a sanctuary that really had been a factory farm, and now it's a sanctuary for animals. And so there was a monk there who gave a lecture. Actually, we had a dialogue, and it was very powerful. He was a beautiful guy, and he told the story about how the founding master. Oh, it's just so much to tell. The problem is I'm running out of time because I have to go, but I'll just in a few minutes, I'll tell a little bit about that. It's just incredibly inspiring what I've been seeing here and what this group is doing. There should be some kind of full length feature, like, 2 hour or hour and a half documentary about this group, because they are spectacular in what they're doing, and nobody knows it. They're very low key. They don't tell anybody. But this sanctuary is just one tiny example. And so they have, I think, about 2,000 monks, or maybe not that many, 1,500 monks and nuns. And then they have many, probably, several hundred thousand students. So it's large and it's new. It's only 15 years old. It's exploding in growth, it seems to me, if I can figure it out. And they're the ones that, when I was here in Taiwan 5 years ago, I guess it was, put on the event where 2,000 people came. That was them. That was the same group. And now for the first time since then, I'm working with them again, that same group, and I'm learning more about them. That's just the group that single-handedly transformed Taiwan into one of the most organic agriculture countries in the world. 15 years ago, there was no organic. And they started the movement here because the master was walking, I guess, and he saw dead birds in a field. And he said, why are these birds dead? Some dead egrets. And they said, oh, it's because of the pesticides that they use in the fields and the rice paddies and things. And he started crying, and he just thought, no, we can't do this. We can't use, this is not an option. We can't be killing animals with pesticides. So he told us, his group that we've got to make Taiwan organic. And they're doing it. I mean, we went to Taroko Gorge. The first day we got here, we went to Taroko Gorge, which is this famous gorge on the east side of the island where nobody lives. We took this long train ride. And we went into this dramatic gorge, and we went high up into the mountains. I'm telling you, it's like this amazing gorge and beautiful. We took a walk. We saw, the whole thing. And then we went up high into the mountains where these little farmers in this little village, and they always used pesticides and killed all the animals. It was a war against the local animals. There's monkeys, lots of owls and other birds. Lots of little animals, these beautiful little bats and flying mice. I mean, amazing animals that live in the area. And so the farmers, of course, would have set traps to try to kill them because they would come in and hurt the, steal their vegetables and things. And so there's all these dogs still walking around with three legs in this village because they themselves, when they were out and walking around in the woods, they would get their paws, chopped off by these traps. And so we petted so many three-legged dogs. But the beautiful thing was how the local farmers were struggling. They had pesticides and they were using them, and they had a war against the local animals. And it's this beautiful, pristine, like national park area, but they use typical conventional agriculture. And then the Bliss and Wisdom people came in and said, if you will grow organically, we will buy everything that you grow. And so they had to teach them how to do it. And they taught them how to do it and how to plant and what to use and all that to make the transition. And they gave them interest-free loans of money so they could make the transition. And that was working okay, but it still wasn't working well enough. And we met this beautiful farmer and his wife who were struggling. He was drinking a lot. He was sick and using pesticides. And then they switched over, but it still wasn't working that well because organic is difficult and the problems and the monkeys come running in and steal all their fruits and eat all the cabbages. And then these other animals would come in and he was, didn't know what to do. And then they re-educated the farmers by having them go to these Buddhist schools and teaching the farmers that life is eternal, that you are not just a being who is born and will die. You are a spiritual being, and to do agriculture as a spiritual being, to be a farmer who has compassion for all life. And it was so neat to meet this guy and to hear him tell his story. He said, all I cared about when I was a farmer was making money and trying to grow crops to make money. And if I had to kill the animals to make enough money to eat and live, then I would do it. He said, I understand that all beings are interconnected and we're all one life. And monkeys want to eat some, then it's okay. We have a little race. Who can get the most food first? He said, we grow a whole bunch of food over here. That's for them. And then this is for us. And we talked to him, but his whole attitude has changed because he said, now I know that life is eternal. And since life is eternal, I'm not here just to make money. I'm here to learn. And so they go to these classes. He goes to a class every week for 2.5 hours and he studies the Buddhist scriptures. And he said, my master is teaching me how to be a good person, how to live a noble life, how to raise my character to a higher level. And his wife was so sweet. She said, oh, my husband, he's like totally different. He doesn't drink anymore. He doesn't smoke anymore. He's so loving to me and to my family and the children. And they're all so happy. They're laughing. And he laughs about how the monkeys come and eat the food. But it's so great. And then, It was like I was just on the edge of tears, just these high mountains all around, the spectacular scenery, and then this biologist came in at night and did a slide presentation. He's a like super high level biologist who's a master, like famous wildlife photographer, and he showed all the wildlife that grows in the area. I mean, the thrives in the air, all the different birds, and he had amazing photographs that he himself had taken of a snake eating a mouse, and all this incredible footage that he had taken himself at night or during the day with these big cameras that he has. And he said, then he shows all this, he has these film screenings to the local village and shows them all the animals and how they come back. Because he said when he came there like 10 years ago, there were no animals. There were no animals, no birds. It was just quiet. It was dead. Everything was dead. Now there's all these birds, insects, animals, all thriving because they went organic. They stopped the pesticide. They stopped trapping animals. All the villagers now love all the local animals because he went to the trouble of taking pictures of them and videotapes of them so they can see them and appreciate them living their lives. And it's so fun to see the videos. He took these amazing videos of the monkeys out in the jungle, running around, swimming through the trees. And then there's these deer that are there, and the deer are walking around. And then the monkeys, jump on the deer and kind of ride them. It was like amazing. And the deer kind of, play with the monkeys. And, this is stuff that the villagers love. And so now the villagers are so in respecting the animals, and it's bringing more tourists as they built this hotel, like a hostel where people come to take walks and appreciate the animals. And so it's, and then there's a school there too, that the kids showed this beautiful, it's not like small, it's only like 30 students, but a very creative school. So we visited that. Anyway, it was, that was really inspiring. Then we went to the whole Suu Kyi thing with the rescuing, helping people in disasters. And then yesterday we went to that sanctuary that they've started. And then the crowning thing, which really had me literally in tears. I thought I must be on another planet. This is the future. This is because what I saw, they took me to what they call their education park. And I just was unprepared to be so completely overwhelmed by what I saw. But basically, the neatest thing, okay, so we drove to this education park. It was about maybe a half an hour drive or 45 minutes from the sanctuary. And it was, again, it was huge. Like they have about, 400 acres. It was all originally, 15 years ago, it was just a gigantic sugar plantation, just flat. And now they've planted all these trees. It's like a forest. It's beautiful. And they've built, I would say, maybe a dozen huge buildings. And they have a school with over 1,000 students from kindergarten through 12th grade. And so that was what was amazing. It was this, and they're now building a university, and it's totally but it's not just for children, it's for adults. They had, like when I was there, when we were there yesterday, they had 2,000 people were there on a 2-week adult education retreat. And they were all in, and it's all based on Chenrezig, on the Avalokiteshvara, Om Mani Padme Hum, the mantra of compassion. And so they had these children, like they were maybe 12 or 13 years old, they spoke English, and they were taking me around, and they showed, Madeline and me, and they were showing us around their school. And, it was just spectacular. I mean, these students, they, it's very traditional, and they meditate, and it's all basically vegan. It's vegetarian, but it's basically vegan. And they grow their own food. They spend like 2 hours a day working in the fields in these organic gardens. Their whole thing is organic vegan agriculture. And they teach the children that. They also teach, they don't allow, I mean, can you imagine? They don't allow the kids to have any cell phones or computers or anything. So they're just raised in nature with each other. And the boys are separated, the girls are separated. That's very traditional, but they're beautiful. The kids are so beautiful. I mean, they're so protected and loved. And they took me around, and they took me to the fields where they were working, just to see all these kids playing and jump roping and running around and throwing the ball, and how they explained to me that their life, that the most important thing in life is to become a noble person and to raise our character. And I really literally broke down in tears. I thought, it's such a large scale, and it's such pure vegan education of young kids, and they were so beautiful, these kids. I can't convey it, unfortunately. And just to be surrounded by all these kids who were, working in the fields, and how the older kids teach the younger kids how to do the agriculture, and the younger kids also teach the older kids how to get in there and do the weeding, and how a lot of kids didn't like it, and how humble they were. They said, some kids don't like to work hard. Some of us don't like to work hard, but then when we work, we realize, the more we love the land, the more the love lands us, the more the land loves us. And they had these beautiful teachers and volunteers that were helping the kids. And we ate a meal. They cooked a meal out in the field, the kids themselves, with they steamed their own greens. It was amazing to see all these kids, like steamed greens, like steamed bok choy. The little boys are, these little, 8-year-old boys are all steaming on these little burners out in this field on this table. And then they hand it to each other and give it, and they love it. Yum, yum, yum. They're eating. And then they make this, these pancakes. This is like a special treat with vegetables, and the rice they grow themselves. They go out into the rice paddies in their bare feet and they grow the rice. And a lot of them become monks and nuns. They have a huge center apparently in Canada. That's their main center, is in Prince Edward Island, Canada. I won't go into it, but there's all these, the politics of mainland China and Taiwan is very complex, and mainland China does not approve of Tibetan Buddhism. And so, they have to be very careful. They can't really let this be known, because mainland China doesn't like Taiwan being separate, and they especially don't like Tibetan Buddhism. And this is a Tibetan Buddhist center on Taiwan. So they have to kind of do everything kind of quietly, but it's just so great to see this whole big vegan movement just growing. And so Gordon and Ruby are the people who are setting all this up, want us they feel like this is the three thing. Like, you have the Tzu Chi people who have a huge movement with the woman founder, and then this other one, the Tibetan one, the Bliss and Wisdom. And then they think the World Peace Diet is links them together to make them, to bring them really into a pure vegan way of expressing themselves fully. And so I talked a lot about dairy to these people, and because they're still not totally on board with that. And so that's the work. And so in about 2 minutes, I have to leave right now, actually, and go to a lecture to the senior monks in this organization. And then we're going to do a public lecture with a piano concert this evening. And then we've got so many things booked every day. Madeline's doing a cooking class. It's going to be televised. And we've got lectures right up to the last day. The 25th, Christmas Day, is the biggest lecture. And then we fly on the 26th back. So it's really incredibly intense. But I have to say, it's worth every second of it. And I'm so grateful to the people and to everyone. And I'm sorry I couldn't show photos. I'll try to post some photos at some point to give a sense of what's going on here. We've been everywhere we've been since we got to Taiwan. There's been a group of about 14 people going with us everywhere, taking photographs of everything, video. We have two full-time videographers, two full-time photographers. They're taking massive amounts of video. I mean, we have no privacy. I mean, everything, we're just continually being photographed. as soon as we came out of the gate, of the airplane, they had this big banner welcoming us with all these photographers and videographers, and they've just been going with us everywhere. It's always like a whole crew of people, and they donate all the money and everything themselves to pay their own way, to pay their own hotel, travel around with us everywhere. They donate everything. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. I mean, it's like another reality over here. And they're so enthusiastic and positive. I mean, it's really humbling. They're so far beyond. There's just, I can't even begin to express the degree to which I'm humbled to be part of this, to see what these groups are doing, and to see the beauty of these kids. I mean, you know, when I compare it to what kids in the United States, like kids are going to school, I try to say, you know, I didn't even want to say it, you know, kids go to school in the United States with guns and knives to protect themselves. I mean, these kids are, their whole foundation is love and cooperation, and you just see them walking around holding each other's hands, and the boys and girls are separate. I just love it. I mean, how they have their own separate dormitories and classes and everything, and they just evolve in their purity and in their innocence. Without being bombarded. They don't go home. I mean, it's a live-in school. They go home. They're in school for the spring semester for 5 months. Then they go home for 1 month in the summer. Then for 5 months in the fall semester, and then 1 month with their parents. And their parents can only visit one day in each of those two. They can visit one day in the spring and one day in the fall, but that's it. So, but the parents apparently just love it because they find their kids are completely transformed. They're so, so loving and peaceful. And, so the parents just absolutely love the whole thing. So, it's very interesting. It's just so interesting, to see what they're doing here and to actually communicate with these kids. The adults hardly did anything. Kids just showed me around. The kids are teaching each other and led the whole tour and did everything. this little 8-year-old kid was showing me around the farm, and all the other kids, they respect each other. I mean, it's so interesting. They built this tree hut that you have to climb up these, it's a banyan tree, you have to climb up these roots to get into it. I mean, it's really acrobatic, and everybody was doing it. You know, they're very active. They're running around. I mean, it's such a combination of meditation and activity and education. The whole idea is education not to be practical. It's not a practical education. It's not to make money. It's to develop your character, to understand wisdom, to build wisdom. You know, it's the opposite of the materialism. Their whole idea is to get away from materialism and go for spirituality, and to live it as compassion for all beings. You know, it's so pure that my head is reeling, because I remember getting my PhD at Berkeley and thinking, wow, you know, is there some way to bring, and they're doing it. They're bringing that in. All right. I'm going to stop here. Thank you all so much. I went way over, but we had that gap. Unfortunately, I'll try to make a recording of this at some point. I won't be able to do it. I was hoping to do it now. I'll do it as soon as I can to get it up. And, let's see. I'm going to, I know what I can do. I can just do this. Bingo. All right, everybody's unmuted. Thank you, everyone. You know, anybody want to say anything, you can. Yeah, I think. Are you all unmuted? Oh, wow. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yay.
Thank you, Will. Beautiful.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. I appreciate it. And I'll get better at this whole thing. I hope it worked okay. Give me any feedback. Send me an email or whatever.
It was just fantastic, Will. I feel like crying right around, right with you. It's marvelous. It's so beautiful.
I know. Oh. It was so beautiful. I know. Yesterday I was crying.
I love Asia anyway. I love Asia, but to come there as a vegan, oh my God. Oh yeah. My God.
Well, it's like we got
beautiful.
We got this like secret tour behind the scenes that no one sees really. And it's like, I'm just totally speechless really. What happened?
Oh, me too. Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful.
All right, gotta go.
Thanks for sharing it with us.
Yeah, love for Madeline too.
All right. Bye. Hug, kiss, Madeline.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.